liquid as sex. Lawyer Phil Potts says you must invest in something doomed to fail. It will help you divest. Cashbox says they'll call me a fake. Who cares about art when you need a tax break? Produce something awful like a rotten Broadway play, certain to close on opening day. Liquid assets will get you someday. If you don't hide them, you'll have to pay. If you walk on easy street, careful where you plant your feet, 'cause money can send you higher. It's a wolf in lamb's attire.
I want to open this episode of the Raincoat Report by giving a public service announcement that we usually end the show with, but it's very important to our listeners out there.
What is it?
Don't forget your raincoat.
Okay.
This is very important because one of our raincoat faithful, I assume, recently found himself in a lot of trouble.
Oh,
and by
no.
Recently, I mean a few weeks ago by the time this comes out. But on Twitter, or X as it's known by
I call
dorks,
it Twitter.
I saw a post several nights ago that said, "Went to go see Love Lies Bleeding, and this drunk guy jacked himself off to sleep."
Yeah.
And it was accompanied by a picture that showed this guy's open pants and his penis just laying out.
Yeah.
And he is asleep in his chair.
Yeah, he's got a whole little setup on his table, though. He's got some vapes, a couple little bottles.
Yeah, this is at one of those...
those nice theaters, I get.
Yeah. He's got big leather seats that recline and stuff, and next to him, yeah, there's a little table where he's got his Marlboros and a couple open bottles of liquor and, yeah, some vape stuff.
He's just blasting ciggies in the movie theater? I mean, I know he's jacking off, so...
Well, at this point, he's not doing anything other than sleeping.
No, at that point, he's having a little post-goon nap.
Yeah, so if you recall, and I know you do, Jeremy, but yeah. If our listeners recall, several months back, we talked about how in the modern era, the goons no longer have the porn theaters to go to, so they have to go to R-rated films to goon. And, you know, again... Our final, the final thing we settled on was you can go to Oppenheimer and jack off for 3 hours, but you can't go to Barbie and jack off for 2 hours.
No, it has to be an R-rated film.
Yes, and Love Lies Bleeding is an R-rated film.
No crime.
But the follow-up to this is this man was arrested, at least according to Twitter.
Well, set him free.
And so the Raincoat Army has lost a member's... Well, members' freedom, at least.
Yeah, he's dead.
But...
They put him to death.
The important thing is, this may not have happened if he had not forgotten his raincoat.
That's true. He would have just been a sleepy man in a raincoat.
Yes.
With a bunch of cigarettes and so forth.
Right.
His dick would have been out still, but no one would have seen.
Right, yes. If his raincoat was covering his dick.
That's, yeah.
That's the whole point of wearing the raincoat.
I know. I get it.
I know. I'm explaining to the listeners who may not have caught on yet.
Oh.
Because this guy hadn't caught on. And clearly he had been listening to the show.
Yeah, he'd went there with the intent.
But he had not gotten to the end of the episode. He heard us starting to wrap up and plug stuff. And he turned off the episode every time before he heard us give the plea to forget your raincoat. And that's why I thought it was important to open this episode.
Yeah.
By telling our listeners.
That's a good point, because people usually shut us off about halfway through.
So, yes, you know, again, a warning to our listeners and a call to arms. Don't forget your raincoat.
Call to arms?
A call to arm yourself with a raincoat.
Okay.
Yes. So, Jeremy, well... let's welcome our fans to the Raincoat Report.
Hello.
And it's Jeremy and Boss. And what episode, what movie are we covering this week, Jeremy?
Well, I think you know full well that my bereaved state, my mind inflamed with grief. And I perhaps forgot that, you know, there are too many porn movies.
There are too many porn movies.
And I'll chalk this one up just to my own hazy memory.
Yes.
I watched Corporate Assets from 1985, directed by Thomas Paine.
Yes, and I watched Liquid Assets from 1982, directed by Roberta Findlay.
What's important is that we had agreed to watch Liquid Assets.
Yes.
And I was texting you about the movie as I was watching it last night at about 2 a.m., probably about an hour into the film.
Yeah.
And you said...
You said
Herschel Savage broke a chair over a woman's ass.
Yes, and I was like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And then I started to think to myself... Wait.
You thought it was real life. Well, you thought it was real life until I was like, no, in the movie we watched.
Oh, yeah. I asked when. And you were like, in the movie you made me watch. And I was like, Herschel Savage wasn't in any of the movies we were supposed to watch for the show this time.
I laughed so hard that my head hurt.
So, next week we'll be covering Corporate Assets.
Excellent.
But this week we're going to cover Liquid Assets that... Jeremy hasn't, in any meaningful way, watched.
I'm watching it right now. We've got Ron Jeremy looking very, it's got like a perm or something.
Yeah, this is earlier Ron Jeremy.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say that Ron Jeremy was ever the most attractive man, but he certainly hadn't let himself go all the way at this point.
No. Oh. Well, who he's talking to? Well, I'm not going to get that far ahead.
So, Liquid Assets is it's a film about Broadway, or more directly, off Broadway.
The Broadway. That's what it's about.
As I mentioned, it's directed by Roberta Findlay. According to IMDb, at least Walter Sear co-directed it with her. But we do have quite an all-star cast here, including, but not limited to, Bobby Astor, Arbola, Ron Jeremy.
Arbola, star of Corporate Assets, I'll say.
Fair enough.
If you look at the posters for both of these films, I feel like you can understand my confusion. Both of them use the assets dollar scheme.
Yeah.
Dollar bill scheme with the S's.
Uh-huh.
They're both like faintly green and have just like some like signatory like signs towards like, you know, like, oh, it's about money or something like that. And I was like, okay. So I'd just been holding it in my head for a while. I was like, it's the one with the bird women on the front that I have to watch. And I was like, damn, this movie's long. I was like, oh, well.
Oh, is it long?
It's like an hour and 44 minutes. It's not super long, but it's a little.
Yeah.
I will say, I think it is worth its own episode versus me just occasionally commenting on it.
Yeah.
It was quite a film and much more than I anticipated it to be. But like all good things, you'll have to kind of learn about it on Raincoat Report time.
Yeah. So. A day late and a dollar short.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had seen...
And if you'd like to be a dollar short...
Or $5 short.
Consider subscribing today at patreon.com/raincoatreport, where we give you two extra episodes a month, including last week's episode, where I go over the only film I've watched in the past month or so, Madam Web, in painstaking detail. I don't know what Boss talked about. We haven't recorded it yet. But as we get on to that, let's get back on to the movie Boss watched.
Yeah, so, in addition to our gentlemen, Bobby Astor, Arbola, and Ron Jeremy, we also have Fred Lincoln of Last House on the Left fame. But we also have quite a cast of ladies, including, but not limited to, Samantha Fox, Veronica Hart, Tiffany Clark, and Sharon Kane, and Lisa B. But our leading lady is Sandy Gazelle, who plays Susie. I had not seen Sandy Gazelle
that's not a real in
anything
person.
Other than this, which I saw some years ago and kind of pretty much forgot about like what happened in it. But according to IMDb, she was in a grand total of 2 films, this and another one called Blue Jeans. So her career...
Short-lived.
Short-lived, but...
burned bright.
Yeah. Blue Jeans, also an X-rated film in 1982. Sandy Gazelle, Jeremy noted, has kind of a facial resemblance to Sharon Mitchell.
Yes, yeah.
But her biggest asset in this film
is... not her nose.
No, it's her gigantic tits that are out a lot of the film.
Hell yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So this film, narratively speaking... feels a lot like a riff on The Producers.
Okay.
The classic Mel Brooks tale that was later adapted. That was first a movie, then adapted into a Broadway play, and then another movie.
Yes.
And also a centerpiece for one of the seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes.
Where Larry David and Matthew Broderick, I believe, playing the lead roles in a stage production.
Mm-hmm. And lucky for... our listeners, I've watched both film versions of The Producers within the last few months. So, oh,
well, that's cool.
They're in my head. Yeah, Matthew Broderick.
Nathan Lane?
Yes, Matthew Broderick killed that woman.
Oh.
Yeah. That's it. You can Google it. I'm just letting... It's a fact. It's not one of something... It's not like a God phone. I don't have to try to explain it.
Fair enough.
It's... if you go... to Google and type in Matthew Broderick killed that lady in Scotland. Don't Google it.
Oh, yeah.
I told you.
Like, killed 2 people.
There you go.
While driving on the wrong side of the road, yeah. and was fined $175.
That's really, yeah. It's crazy. Like, you think your life would be ruined if you, like, kill a pedestrian, but even if you're, like, a normal person and you just, like, crush someone in a crosswalk, there's a chance you'll just, like, walk free. The odds are stacked against you if you're on your feet. Especially if Matthew Broderick's coming. Who else? Who else has been killing people? Vince Neil killed his passenger.
Oh.
Yeah. But I don't think anyone died when they were making this movie.
I don't think anyone died
when they were making The Producers.
Well, in liquid assets, the most dangerous thing you had to deal with was Ron Jeremy.
Mm. That's something.
Peril enough.
That's quite... I don't want to tangle with him, you know?
Anyhow. This is similar to The Producers in some ways because the... producer of this play is trying to use it as a tax shelter and lose money on it, but things don't quite go as planned. But there are a lot of unique aspects of this film that differentiate it from The Producers, or at least my memory of The Producers.
I'll let you know.
And so we'll figure that out. Anything else you need to add before we take our break?
Yeah. One day, well, I'll look back on this and laugh. There you go.
Well, I'll say this. By the fact that you at least watched The Producers, you'll have more input on this than you did on our High School Fantasies episode.
I watched a lot of Happy Days.
I guess that's fair.
But that didn't really come in handy in that one. That was more of an American Graffiti.
Probably, yeah.
But I did watch a bunch of Happy Days. Including the one where Fonzie beats up a kid. All right, let's go to break.
And the one that Axel Braun directed.
Yeah. That one was great, yeah.
Tommy Gunn played Fonzie.
Yeah, he does, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Anyhow, and if you want to learn about that, patreon.com/raincoatreport. But either way, We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk a little bit more about liquid assets.
Please try to understand, Plotsy. I hate to leave you. I love the farm and Trotsville, but I have to go. You see, out there is fame, fortune, and success. I'm going to be a famous actress on Broadway. Maybe a celebrity, and maybe even go to Hollywood and do a film or something. I have oodles of talent. My high school English teacher even told me so after the senior play. She said, Susie, you should be on a stage. I wonder what she meant when she said that one was leaving in 10 minutes.
Jeremy's watching the film now.
Yeah.
As we get ready to talk about it so that he can...
taking it in.
Yes. So, Liquid Assets opens with our Liquid Assets theme song. And we open on some cows eating hay and then cut inside to... Flotsy the horse being fed carrots by Susie, who again is played by Sandy Gazelle in one of her two roles. But she's the lead here, so that's pretty cool. She's telling the horse that she's going to be a famous actress on Broadway and maybe even go to Hollywood to be a film actor. She knows that she needs to make money because she needs to save the farm. But she practically has a job already, which she demonstrates by pulling out a newspaper that has an ad on it, looking for actresses with no experience necessary. She tells the horse not to poop inside, and then we see the horse dropping shit on the floor.
Cool.
As we get our title card and the Liquid Assets theme kicks in heavier.
There's no horse shit in Corporate Assets.
Well... that's one knock against it. We then see Susie wandering the streets of New York as we get our credits. We cut to a stage where we see a discussion between a man and a woman. I thought that it was a performance just by how stilted their dialogue was, but in fact it is not. It is Stan Slavsky, played by Rod Pierce, talking to Bessie, played by Sharon Kane. Stan Slavsky is a director of theatrical productions, and Bessie is his assistant. They talk about how they don't have the money to pay rent for the theater, but Stan notes that all he needs is someone to play the role of Anastasia in his production. Bessie notes that she placed ads in all of the papers, and Stan says that that was a genius idea and starts to drone on about the beautiful actress he wants. He rambles and rambles and ends by asking, I wonder if I should fuck her before or after the first rehearsal. We then cut to the offices of Philpotts and Slime.
Ha.
It's here that we're introduced to lawyer Philpotts, played by Ron Jeremy.
Okay.
Who's dictating a letter to the off-screen secretary, Fleda. It's a letter telling Mr. Cashbox that his current tax situation could earn him 3 to 5 years in the penitentiary. We then cut away from Philpotts to Mr. Cashbox, played by Bobby Astor. He's there with Miss Slim Tits, played by Tiffany Clark. They're on a mattress on the floor of a small room, and she asks why they can't meet at his place. He says that he likes the change of scenery, but she asks if he really misses his king-size bed, oriental rugs, and his original Rembrandts hanging on the wall. She suggests that he's trying to avoid Billy figuring out what he's doing, noting that Billy is a big critic. He asks what she knows about Billy, and she tells him everybody knows about him and Billy. We cut back to Philpotts in his office, continuing his dictation. He suggests that Cashbox pack his bags for a long trip. We cut back to Slim Tits and Cashbox. Slim Tits asks if Billy touches Cashbox the way that she does. He tells her no, but notes that Billy would cut it off if she knew another woman was touching him. Miss Slim Tits mounts Cashbox Cowgirl and starts to ride his cock. He talks about her breasts being firm like a little girl's, which was an odd thing for him to say.
I don't think you should say that.
No. He notes how hard her nipples get, referring to them as little rosebuds. Cashbox slides into Slim Tits slowly and talks about how tight and wet she is. "You drive me to passions beyond my wildest dreams," he says. He says that he can feel her coming, which makes him want to come too, and he pulls out as Miss Slim Tits strokes his cock and finishes him off. Miss Slim Tits ends the scene, declaring that she loves older men. We cut back to Philpott's dictating, suggesting that he meet with Mr. Quim, a tax man who could potentially sell Cashbox a loophole. He ends his dictation, suggesting that he meet with Mr. Quim and bring cash, as we zoom out and see that the Miss Flata that he's been dictating to was just a blow-up doll, and Philpott's, of course, isn't wearing pants.
Because she's inflatable.
Yes.
You get it?
Yes.
Okay.
Lawyer Philpott's tells Miss Flata that he can't take it anymore, and that he can't wait to feel her breasts against him, and he has to give it to her right now. He adds that she never argues or fights and demands that she suck his cock right now. So Philpott stuffs his cock into the doll's mouth and starts to fuck it. He keeps rambling about how she never argues, never quibbles. He tells her that he wants to fuck her and lays her back on the desk. The doll's wig on her head starts to fall off, and he calls it out, eventually tossing the wig aside and telling her that she's a better blonde anyway, referencing the doll's hair design that existed already under the wig. He stuffs his cock into the doll's vagina and starts to fuck her. He says he's not going to come in her pussy, adding he doesn't want a paternity suit, and says that he's going to fuck her ass. So he turns the doll over and starts to fuck her doll ass. He puts her wig back on her, telling her that he liked her more as a brunette. He says that he wants to come all over her back, and indeed he pulls out and comes on her back. He tells her that he's going to bite her because it always helps her come, but then he bites her doll ass, which punctures her and sends her flying across the room. We then cut to Susie walking the New York street, suitcase in hand. She then wanders into the theater and walks onto the stage where Stanislavski and Bessie are talking. Susie introduces herself to Stan and Bessie. Stan tells Susie that she needs to get a good theater lawyer, suggesting that she meet with lawyer Philpott's later that evening. Right. Bessie suggests that Susie read for the role of Anastasia, and Bessie will help her by reading the role of the Tsarina. Stan explains that this is set in the past in Russia, and that Susie must read the role with great pathos. Susie opens the script of Peace and War, their script.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Peace is P-I-E-C-E.
Yeah, I get it.
She opens it to the requested page and starts to monotonously and quickly read the page with no hint of actual acting. In fact, she starts to read stage directions, and this leads to Stan to say, "She just read the stage directions, but look at those tits."
Oh, yeah.
Wow, look at those tits.
Excellent. The button that keeps giving.
The scene is a discussion between Anastasia and the Tsarina about sexual acts. Stan finally interrupts the scene and decides to coach Susie's acting. He does this by standing behind her and holding her breasts as she talks. Susie pulls away and says that Stan's squeezing her breasts and he's going to turn them black and blue. He tells her that she has to be willing to make sacrifices for acting as he exposes her breasts. Susie pulls away and says she's not that type of girl. She starts to ramble and like goes on this long diatribe about how they told her not to trust people in the city, and they're always going to try to use you, and like she does this a few times through the film.
That's what I was talking about last week with the village.
Yeah. He offers to kiss it and make it better, and she tells him that she promised to stay pure and talks as she walks off. As she's leaving, Stan crumples to the floor and screams that, "You've got the part!" Bessie walks in and starts to baby talk Stan, asking if that mean girl hurt her Stan. She pulls Stan towards her and tells him to suck on her soft breast. We then cut to lawyer Philpotts, who's using rubber cement to try to repair his darling Fleta,
yes,
who is now deflated.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
Susie walks in, boobs still out. Mm-hmm. She tells him that she came to New York to be an actress, and she needs a big-time lawyer to draw up the contract for her first role. Philpotts is clearly not paying attention, focused on the busted doll, but when Susie produces $100, Philpotts looks up and compliments her pair and offers to help her before snatching the cash out of her hand. We cut back to the theater where Bessie's still baby-talking Stan about that nasty girl, noting that she made his cock hard. Bessie starts to suck and stroke Stan's cock as he fondles her breasts. She sucks him hard for a couple minutes here, and then we see Stan erupt with a big, thick load as he's stroking.
It is a massive load.
Indeed.
And you catch it from multiple angles in this one. Quite something. But then she's talking in the very next scene, and her face is completely clean.
You know,
continuity. It's hard.
Coating Bessie's face, her tongue, and his hand. Yeah, Bessie explains, "What a fucking director." At Philpotts.
Wow. Sorry, I saw something amazing later.
At Philpotts' office, he asks Susie to get a contract from the file cabinet. She reaches in the top drawer of the file cabinet, and he says, "No, lower." And she reaches in a lower drawer, and he says, "No, lower." And of course, her breasts are exposed, so he's just getting a good view of her breasts dangling.
Yeah, he's really taking it all in.
So she finally pulls the contract out of the bottom drawer, and as she's looking at the contract, Philpotts grabs her breasts, and she pulls away. She tells him that she's not that type of girl, and he tells her they can meet later to go over the details first for dinner. He's going to go to a business dinner with some colleagues, strictly professional, he says, and then suggests that they can go for a nightcap. She storms off, rambling about how she was warned about city people, etc. once again. We then cut to Cashbox again, Bobby Astor, doing a headstand at the foot of a bed.
Yes.
As he's being blown by Billy, played by Samantha Fox.
Yeah, pretty amazing agile stuff for a man of his age.
Yes. We cut to them laying on their sides and Cashbox fucking Bobby in sort of a sideways doggy position. Then they move on to a standard doggy style fucking. And then a standing 69. Bobby lays
back. Very athletic scene.
It really is. Bobby Astor, you know, he's not the most classically handsome guy, but A, he's got a ton of personality and he's hilarious in his acting. And B, as this scene and some others that we've seen have demonstrated, he's willing to go the extra mile in an athletic fucking scene.
Yes.
And he would drink a mile of piss just to see certain women's pussies.
You know that's true.
Take a mile of piss to see her pussy.
Because we have it on tape.
Yes.
And we're using it to blackmail him.
Is Bobby Astor still with us?
Probably not. And it's, you know, I've got this movie up in full screen, so I couldn't tell you. Damn, this 69, standing 69, pretty good.
He passed away in 2002 at the age of 64.
Blackmailing his children.
He would be in his 80s today. He would be older than Joe Biden at this point.
I would vote for him.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll vote for Bobby Astor. I'd vote for Paul Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he wants to take away our
perverted porno zones.
Yeah, I would actually.
He's in corporate assets, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing about Paul Thomas is we would later find out by him accidentally sitting on the button for the microphone that he was totally into the perverted porno zones.
Yeah. He still would have had to probably ban him, though, to be, like, safe, you know, just because that's what he promised.
I mean, I guess.
And then he would just have porno for himself. That's how they all do it. I learned just this week about a senator from Oklahoma named Dusty Devers who wants to ban porn.
Uh-huh.
That's just a porn star name.
And it really is.
And he wants to ban your porn because his parents named him that.
It's fucked up.
It's fucked up, and it shouldn't be allowed.
I think that there's, you know what? Now's as good a time as any. I'm sure that you're aware, but I'll bring this up. There is a major movement right now for a push for age verification in order to be on porn sites.
Yeah, yeah. They shut it down in Texas recently.
Yeah, Pornhub.
Well, Pornhub shut itself down.
Pornhub shut itself down not only in Texas. There are several other states that it happened to shortly thereafter. So here's what happened. There has been a push amongst conservatives to force age verification in order to get onto a porn site. Now, here's what I'll say. I don't necessarily have a problem with the idea of taking steps to ensure that only adults can see adult content.
Yes.
Even as somebody who, as a minor, certainly saw his fair share of pornography. But the problem is multifaceted. First off, these laws are only going to apply to the companies that are getting the most pressure, such as Pornhub.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but there's a lot of pornography on the internet that isn't on Pornhub.
That's crazy.
And because of that, anybody in any of these states with age verification laws will have no problem finding pornography. There are, in fact, many of the PornTube sites that are hosted in other countries that are not subject to these laws, and therefore, you know, you'll be able to go to any of these sites. Now, Pornhub itself is certainly not totally the up and up.
Yeah, it's not a perfect entity. But I would never argue that.
But I will say that it might only be because of recent pressures, but they do, as of today, have some pretty strict verification guidelines.
Yeah.
In order to ensure that what is on the site is, for the most part, consensual and legal.
Yes, they've embraced some stuff. You can't find a bunch of stuff anymore.
They eliminated the more than half of their pornography.
Yeah.
Just because they decided to move it to where only verified creators can be on the platform.
Yeah, because there used to be if you wanted to see facial compilations, those are all over the place.
Yeah.
Now you can't get them unless it's the same girl over and over because she's uploaded all of hers.
Right. Well, and the problem was, of course, this happened because Pornhub had no moderation.
Right.
And because of that, there were reports of people being raped.
Right.
And, having a video of it on Pornhub and them not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
So it took a bunch of legal action for them to finally step up and do the right thing.
Sure.
So I understand why it happened, and I'm in support of that. But the problem is that this same pressure has not happened onto many tube sites or many just sites on the internet that host pornography, and they will not be the target of this legislation. The other problem with this, the first step, as I said, basically means nothing because people in others in these states will still be able to find pornography if they're not verified.
Right.
And it will be at less responsible websites.
Sure.
Again, despite the fact that Pornhub's responsibility only came at the behest of legal action anyway. But they are at this point somewhat responsible. But the other problem is this. There is not a standardized way to do this identity verification. So these states have various vendors that this identity verification is happening at.
Uh-huh.
So essentially, we have all of these independent groups who are gathering people's identity verifications, copies of their driver's licenses, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have all these different places doing all of this, They may or may not have good security at these various sites.
There's a very good possibility
that one or perhaps many of these sites end up getting hacked and people's personal information gets leaked, which both first off says that you're a pervert more or less.
Yeah.
And lists your identifying information.
Yeah. They're building a database of gooners so they can send you to camps. I told you that there was a war on for your balls.
And secondly, if they get hacked, odds are they're going to have a scan of your driver's license that they can then use to, like, steal your identity and do financial crimes against you.
Damn. All because I just wanted to see a guy pee on feet.
Yeah.
That's not right. You should be able to see that for just fine.
Anyhow.
Should a kid see that? I don't think so. Should a kid pee on anyone's feet? No.
Right.
Man.
Unless it's their own feet in the shower.
That's funny.
While they're showering.
Yeah.
But anyhow, liquid assets.
Yeah.
Billy lays back on the bed and Cashbox fucks her missionary with her legs pinned up. She's telling him that she wishes he gave it to her more often. She tells him not to stop fucking her and he pounds away for a bit. But he eventually announces that he's going to come, and he pulls out and comes all over her pubes and labia. We see them in bed afterwards, and Billy says that he doesn't love her anymore. Cashbox asks what she means, and she tells him that he used to fuck her with enthusiasm. She asks what made him lose interest, suggesting that he must be seeing another woman. Cashbox asks how she can say that. She says, because you're a man. Cashbox points out that that's a line from a play you saw last night. So again, Billy is a critic of theatrical productions.
Okay.
He says that his lack of passion comes from the fact that he might have to go away for 3 to 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Billy says, with the way he fucks with the government, she's surprised they don't put him away for life. He explains there's still hope. His attorney, Phil Potts, made an appointment with a Mr. Quim, and he has to meet him later to discuss a loophole. So we cut to later, and Mr. Cashbox is there with Slim Tits, his side piece, and they sit at a table and are soon joined by lawyer Phil Potts, Susie, our young starlet, and Mr. Rufus P. Quim, played by Arbola.
There he is.
Phil Potts himself. Yes. Phil Potts rambles about how, after hours of research, Quim was able to find a solution to his problem, which his problem's referred to by Quim as Taximus Maximus, which is explained to mean the tax man is after your ass. The guys introduce the ladies, and Slim Tits notes that gray pubic hair makes her mouth water.
Ooh.
So again, earlier she mentioned that she liked older men. And that's her one personality trait in this film. Quim tells them that loopholes like this don't grow on trees, and he was saving this one for a rainy day, but he learned that money wasn't an issue with Cashbox. So they hand Quim some cash, and he explains that this is about creating a theatrical tax shelter, losing as much money as possible to stay out of jail. Jeremy just showed me the crucifix.
I made it out of a toothpick that's covered in resin. I gotta entertain.
I guess it stinks. It sticks together because of all the resin.
Well, no, it's the Holy Spirit that moves through it and through all things, I believe.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't know if the Holy Spirit moves through all things. I don't think it's like the Force. I gotta catch up on my. I gotta go back to church. Figure that out. I'm gonna ask.
You gotta watch more Star Wars stuff.
I think I'll just watch more Star Wars videos instead of going to church.
Watch more videos of people on YouTube talking about Star Wars.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to watch lore videos. I'm going to watch like a fat guy with a really gross beard talk about how Star Wars is too woke. Going to watch another guy with another gross beard talk about how Star Wars isn't woke and how it's based and cool. I don't fucking know. I'm not going to watch any of that. I'm going to take a nap.
So lawyer Philpott suggests that they use Stan's production as an option. because he knows Stanislavski and his Peace and War production. Philpotts talks about how the theater is run down and the play itself is guaranteed to fail. Cashbox asks how he can know for sure that this is going to work, and Quim says, two words, Tootsie Lamar, the worst actress working today. She's loud, vulgar, clumsy, and banished from every stage in the country since her children's matinee of Pinocchio when she sat on the puppet's face.
Ha! Because his nose is long.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like a...
So Cashbox asks where Quim found her, and he says, well, it's my sister. So they agree to meet with Tootsie Lamar tomorrow. Just then, Slim Tits purposely spills her drink on her top, and Cashbox dabs it off of her chest with a napkin. Philpotts then stands up and starts to dab Susie's top, which did not have anything spilled on it, nope. And she pushes him away and tells him she's not that type of girl.
Yeah, another man rushes up to help.
Yeah.
from what I just saw. Delightful Mel Brooks-style comedy.
So back at the office of Philpotts and Slime, Cashbox and Philpotts are filling out some paperwork with a bit of physical comedy of them tripping over each other. With Flata also taking part in all of this. He's still trying to fix her. When Tootsie Lamar shows up, so Tootsie Lamar is played by the lovely and talented Veronica Hart, and she does everything in this film at like a 15 out of 10.
I can see from her, I can't hear it, but I see from her performance that she's really giving her all.
She's hilarious in this. Philpotts says that she must be Quim's sister, the famous actress. Tootsie starts to rant about how New York producers don't know talent when they see them. Philpotts asks her to quiet down a bit. There are other people in this office. They tell her that they have the perfect play for her. Tootsie rants about how this building has the sexiest elevator and starts talking about how she needs a hard cock as she pulls her tits out. Cashbox tries to steer her on track, explaining that they've got a perfect role for her. She says, I don't roll nobody. If you want to throw me a couple of bucks after we fuck, that's fine, but I'll do it for free. Cashbox tries to get her on track again, but Tootsie asks if this is a real audition because she's never been to one where she didn't fuck the producer. Cashbox says this isn't necessary, but Philpotts, as his lawyer, suggests that he goes along with this. Cashbox sits in a chair and Tootsie begins to suck her cock. He tells her again that she doesn't need to do this, but she says if she doesn't get a piece of ass out of this audition, she doesn't want the job. She says, honey, when I'm hot, I'm hot. She sucks his cock and snarls as she licks and strokes it. She grinds her teeth on it a bit, and Philpotts tries to blow up Flata as this is going on.
Yeah, same with his bike pump here.
Tootsie demands Cashbox fuck her, and she bends over in a doggy position on the couch. Cashbox tells her anything she says and starts to fuck her doggy style. Yes, indeed, Philpotts can't get Flata to inflate. He says that he killed her, so he tries to pump her up with a bike pump, as you mentioned. Cashbox continues to fuck Tootsie doggy style. Philpotts cries, saying that he killed her, tossing Flata aside. Eventually, after fucking her a bit, Cashbox pulls out, grinding against Tootsie's ass cheeks, coming on her ass. Tootsie licks her fingers and winks at Cashbox and the camera. She says, that was the best audition I've ever had, telling him that they really know how to produce a play. She walks away and Cashbox notices smoke coming out of the couch next to him as the scene ends. And I don't know what that is. I thought at first maybe he was smoking at the beginning of the scene, but then I stepped back and looked and he wasn't, so I don't know.
It was just so hot. You know.
We then cut to a judge in a courtroom, Judge Hangman, whose sign on his door says Inferior Court. Judge Hangman is played by Fred Lincoln here.
Who's got his white wig wrapped around his head so he kind of looks like Abraham Lincoln?
Yes. He tells the room that the country has empowered him to put pimps, prostitutes, and pornographers behind thick iron bars.
That's what they want to do to us.
He yells about pimps taking advantage of virginal women. They need 20 years of hard labor. And then he yells about prostitutes corrupting the hearts of fathers and sons and how they get 10 years of hard labor. As this is going on, the camera slowly panning out. And as this happens, we see that there's a woman on her knees bobbing her head in front of his crotch. Pornographers, he says, they're the worst. They're filthy books, magazines, and films showing off those young Barbies. He says he'd lock them up for life if he could, but he must give them the full measure of the law. It's at this point that we see that it's Miss Slim Tits who's going down on him, on her knees blowing him as he drones on. He goes on about how these people, they're sucking the life out of society and how it's an important task and a hard task. Every day it's harder and harder. He's getting blown and clearly he's distracted from his rant. He's approaching orgasm and he says, it all comes to this. Come, come. He moans and grunts and clearly gets off. Slim Tits says, you old men always come so much. Judge Hangman says, legislating society is a sticky situation. Yeah. I rest my case. Slim Tits asks him, have I ever told you that I'm fatally attracted to old men? We then cut to Stan and Bessie walking the streets. They're discussing casting, and Bessie brings up they need to fill the role of Rasputin. Stan has a stroke of inspiration and sees an unhoused gentleman sitting on the sidewalk, huddled in some thick coats and drinking. He suggests that this is going to be their mad monk. Bessie questions it, but Stan says all they need to do is get him some robes and switch from what he's drinking to vodka. We then cut to the theater, where Cashbox and Philpotts are sitting in the audience seats, watching the dress rehearsal, and softly chuckling to what they're seeing on stage. On stage is our cast, including our Rasputin, Bessie, Susie, Tootsie, and even Slim Tits. There's a guy on stage I can't place. This is Michael Bruce, who is unnamed in the credits.
He is, I don't know who he's supposed to be. Maybe he's the czar.
I believe that Stan himself is the czar, actually, in this film.
Then maybe he's that little boy who is all anemic.
Maybe.
The little, you know, the little boy, Prince.
I don't know the story of Anastasia and the czar too much. I know about Anastasia.
Well, Rasputin.
And Rasputin.
Well, that's how he got in. Is he like, this kid was anemic and he like cured him.
Is it
him.
The czar's son?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
Okay.
Little baby czar.
Okay.
You know?
That's, so yeah.
But yeah, I think maybe that's him. I don't know.
So as I mentioned, Stan's playing the czar in these rehearsals, and they're giving an absolutely awful performance to the delight of Philpotts and Cashbox. Philpotts describes it as worse than he even thought, and Cashbox says it's unbelievable. Cashbox watches more and chuckles, telling us this is his get-out-of-jail-free card, and it worked. We then see, on the streets at night, Quim is standing there in a raincoat.
Huh.
And he flashes Roberta Findlay, who runs off. Then Susie is walking by and sees him. She tells him that she's walking home from rehearsals. He covers himself, of course, and tells her that he was just out for a walk. She starts to ramble about her life situation, specifically that her father's farm is getting taken away due to tax problems.
Oh, no.
And of course, that's what started her odyssey to begin with.
It's a very 80s motivation.
Quim isn't having all of this and suggests that she follows him back to his place. So they walk into his apartment, and she says this is a nice place. Quim starts to go on about how Americans throw away the best things, and his house is furnished with other people's garbage. Susie tries to divert conversation back to her father's tax problems, but Quim changes the subject again, suggesting that she get more comfortable unleashing her breasts from her dress. Susie is annoyed by this, but at that point she also drops some paperwork, which Quinn picks up and starts looking through. He's reading through, and then he says, "It's obvious. Not only could they save the farm, but the government would owe her family over 9 million cents. He gives her a figure that's a few cents off at first and corrects himself, saying he's never done that before. Quim starts to undress himself, and Susie goes on again about how she's not that type of girl, and she was told to save herself for someone special, and... But she's interrupted by Quim touching her. She says, "Well, that feels good." She then rambles again about how she was told she shouldn't spread her legs just for anyone, but he starts fingering her, and she says, "Well, you spread my legs and it feels good." He then mounts her and starts fucking her on the couch there. Susie talks about how good his cock feels throbbing inside her. She moans as he pounds away, and after a minute or so, he pulls out and comes on her pubes. They collapse, and then Quim says, "I wonder what it'd take to shut her the fuck up." We then cut to Cashbox fucking Rita, played by Lisa B. He's got her legs pinned up as he's railing her. Rita says, "Oh, Cashbox, I consider this a great honor. You're a terribly important man, an angel of the theater, and so rich." Cashbox rubs her clit and fucks her more. He tells her not to come and be greedy, and they switch positions with him laying sideways and fucking her as she's laying on her back. She plays with her clit as he's railing away. After a minute of this, he pulls out and comes on her pubes. We cut back to Cashbox pouring out some champagne. Rita says she now understands why Billy writes such terrible reviews. He probably fucked her brains out. Cashbox is, just as he was earlier with Slim Tits, surprised that she knows about Billy. She tells him nothing he does is really that private. Cashbox tells Rita that he loves the reviews that she writes. So again, she's another reviewer.
Oh, this is like Gamergate.
He says that she's a breath of fresh air and that she's a consumer protection agency for the public. She says that she always tells the truth so that producers can't profit from sloppy productions. He tells her that he reads her reviews every day. She suggests that Cashbox dumps Billy and perhaps she can take care of him. Cashbox says they can start a relationship right now and mentions his play opening tomorrow. He then produces an envelope and hands it to Rita. Rita looks inside and is shocked to find cash. She's livid. "This is a bribe," she says. Cashbox says, "Well, not exactly," and tries to explain, but Rita is furious, saying all producers are the same, and she knows that she's going to give his play the worst review she's ever written. Meanwhile, Billy shows up. She's in the other room and starts screaming that she's going to kill that bastard, and she can't believe he's there with another woman, and that she's going to cut his balls off. Rita runs out of the room, and Cashbox crawls into bed just as Billy walks into the room. She asks where she is, and Cashbox says he doesn't know what she's talking about. She says that she knows that he was in there with another woman, and he feigns ignorance, saying that he doesn't need anyone else because he has her. She doesn't believe him, and then she demands that he fuck her right now. He tries to say that he's tired and he's been busy, but she says that if he isn't cheating on her, he better fuck her right now, and he better perform well. Otherwise, she's going to give him the best review she's ever given and blow his tax shelter right to hell. He tells her that he'll do the best he can. She pushes his head into her lap and says that she's going to start composing her review. She starts to say her review out loud. She starts saying that she saw the most remarkable play tonight. He goes down on her, and as he does better, she starts to talk about, well, there were some faults with the play, and he keeps working her clit with his tongue. She tells him that she needs to feel his prick inside her, and he starts to fuck her. She is now quite distracted from her review, and she finally says, how could she have thought that he was fucking another woman when he's fucking her like this? She says that she's going to write the worst review ever as he pounds away and pulls out with Billy stroking his cock and making him come on her pubes. Cashbox tells her to allow him some rest, and Billy says, "All right, I'm going to go clean up in the bathroom." But Cashbox suddenly stops her, saying, "Oh, you can't go into the bathroom." Billy asks, "Why the hell not?" And he tells her, "The plumbing's broken." Billy does not believe him and tells him that she's going to find out who he's been fucking. Just then, Rita walks in, hiding her face behind a towel. Billy sees this and pulls the towel away from her, immediately recognizing her as a rival critic. Billy says, "It's bad enough Rita spells like she's in kindergarten, but she had to fuck Cashbox too?" Billy promises to ruin both of them. She says she'll call Rita's editor and have her fired, and that her review will ensure Cashbox goes to jail. We then cut to the premiere of Peace and War.
A very terrible marker-drawn poster. Yes. Yeah.
It's wonderful. We see Cashbox smiling as he's watching the production. We see the audience beginning to leave in droves as the play ends its first act. As the audience is leaving, it seems like they're about to leave the theater, but then Billy starts yelling in the lobby. She tells the audience that what they just witnessed is a new art form. Underneath all the pathos was true comedy. The audience starts to slowly agree with her. We then see backstage, Susie approaches Stan. It's in between acts here, and Susie talks about how the audience didn't seem to like the play. Stan says that's nonsense, and that Susie just has opening night jitters, adding that her character really comes alive in the second act. He then unveils Susie's breasts once again, and says that he sent her out on stage tonight as a girl, but she's going to come back as a woman. Back in the lobby, Billy's going on about how Stanislavski is the next great American playwright. An audience member says, "Yeah, it's a brilliant production." We cut to Stan undressing and grabbing a hold of Susie. She says that she's honored to be with him. Stan starts to fuck Susie as she leans back on the nearby counter. Susie tells him his is even better than Quim's, while Stan quips about how he's genius and how his work will live forever and such. Stan's fucking her, and there's a knock at the door, calling for places for the second act. Susie pushes Stan away, and Stan says it's just inhuman for her to leave him like this. He was just about to come. Susie tells Stan, "The first thing you learn in theater is, the show must go on," and Susie walks off. Stan says, "Oh, nuts. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing." We see the audience, who was seemingly about to leave earlier, return to their seats for the second act. Cashbox watches them, obviously upset. Cashbox then runs to a payphone and places a call to the Vice Squad, telling them that it's his civic duty to report that this play going on has nudity and sexual acts. Meanwhile, in the theater, the audience is laughing. Susie's on stage playing Anastasia with one breast out. Their performance is just as terrible as expected. Mid-scene, Tootsie Lamar calls out Stan as a dimwit for forgetting to do his pants, and she reaches forward and zips up his pants. On the payphone, Cashbox says they need to bring Judge Hangman so he can declare that this play is obscene and lock everybody up. He hangs up after refusing to give his name. In the theater, the crowd continues to laugh. Slim Tits approaches Stan and starts to ramble about being attracted to older men once again, reaching into his pants, in a line that was not in the play. Stan can't take it anymore, and he throws Susie down on a nearby bench and climbs on top of her. Tootsie is giving her lines at a 20 out of 10 and approaches Rasputin, who's drinking, sitting down. And he storms off as he doesn't know his lines or what he's supposed to do and only wanted to drink. Slim Tits, who just wants an older man, drags the unnamed man, again Michael Bruce, over to a chair and bends over so that he can fuck her doggy style. Billy and the audience are laughing at this. Stan's fucking Susie and Michael Bruce is fucking Slim Tits as the audience watches on. Cashbox seems relieved at this point, certain that the authorities will bust them at any moment. Michael pulls out and comes on Slim Tits' ass. The audience continues to laugh. Stan pulls out and comes, saying that, "When I'm with you, I hear bells and sirens." But we hear the sirens as well, and whistles blowing. And then some cops and Judge Hangman take the stage. Hangman says that he declares this play completely obscene. He says in all his years, he's never seen something this obscene. People fornicating on stage. The worst case of coitus profundus he's ever seen. Whores using the stage to show off their filthy acts. And then Miss Slim Tits. Yes. Then Miss Slim Tits walks over to Judge Hangman and says, "Hello," rubbing his crotch. Suddenly, Judge Hangman says, "On the other hand, sex between loving people can be a work of art. We must learn to discriminate between lewd acts and a beautiful play such as this, with redeeming social value." The frame freezes, and then we get a scroll with our characters' fates as we get our liquid assets theme again.
Yeah, I'm seeing everyone had a different fate.
Susie returned to Trotsville, saved her daddy's farm, went to Hollywood with her horse, Plotsy, who became a famous star in cowboy films. Stanislavski won Best Play and the Best Director Award, went to Hollywood and married Susie, was shot by a disgruntled film critic. Mr. Quim opened a string of do-it-yourself tax offices. Miss Slim Tits married Judge Hangman and has four sets of twins. Mr. Cashbox was last heard of running the largest condom factory in Brazil. Lawyer Philpotts, now Senator Philpotts, currently under investigation for selling state secrets to the Eskimos.
Oh.
Tootsie Lamar opened a drama school, closed by Vice Squad January 10th, and then March 13th, and then September 3rd, and then October 4th.
They just don't learn, do they?
And then we get the end. And that was the tale of Liquid Assets.
Wow. It's almost like I saw it.
Almost. But yeah, that was Liquid Assets. And that's the end of our second segment of the show.
Excellent.
So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to give my final thoughts. And perhaps yours just from listening to it.
Excellent.
And seeing some of it as you skip through it. About Liquid Assets.
I skimmed it.
I knew it would. Everybody's weird,
you know what I mean? What's so weird about my brother Quim? Him and I are like two peas in a pot. And honey, there ain't nothing strange about me.
You must be Quim's sister.
Yeah.
The famous actress.
Yeah, you're goddamn right I am. That's me, honey. I'm the best fucking actress around. Trouble is, these cocksucking New York producers, they wouldn't know the difference between a hot piece of ass and a pile of shit.
Sure, please, Tootsie! You gotta keep it down. The stand.
I have a respectable law office here.
Oh, creep lawyers! I tell you, they cost me a fucking fortune with their tarts, their cards, their...
You just talk a little bit more softly. You're not on stage now. We do have something vitally important to discuss.
Yeah, I know. You got the best fucking script in the world. And you're going to fall right on the balls of their ass unless you got me to bail you and your piece of shit play out.
I beg to differ. This does happen to be a very good play about the Tsar.
Oh, great. Do I get to fuck him?
Who?
The Tsar, you asshole!
Jesus, Philpott, you better close the window. You can hear this brought down in the street.
All right, we're back on the Raincoat Report, and it's time once again for...
Wow, look at those tits.
Oh, God damn it.
The Raincoat Review.
So, Liquid Assets was another Roberta Findlay joint, and there's a lot to like here, but overall, I would say that the film isn't anything necessarily spectacular. I'd say that the sex scenes were decent, but not exceptional, but not bad. I'd say that the plot itself is fun, but, I would also say that at the end of the day, you know, it's not, I don't know, similar to the sex scenes, it's not exceptional.
No. It seemed like a nice little comedy.
It is. It's a nice little comedy, and there are some wacky scenes throughout. I, of course, like Ron Jeremy's relationship with Fleda. I think that if he spent more time with sex dolls and less time groping women, the world would be a better place.
Uh-huh.
I did like the fun of Tiffany Clark's character, Miss Slim Tits, and her need for older men.
She loves them.
I think Susie was fun because she's kind of that that Candy from the Erotic Adventures of Candy, or the Peaches from Pretty Peaches, just kind of that naive girl, somewhat being taken advantage of, but at the same time, she, at least early in the film, was able to successfully defend herself from the men who tried to exploit her, but ultimately it didn't work out. But she liked it, much as those other characters did, so whatever. despite the problematic nature of that, as a film itself, it's a funny plot point. Bobby Astor is excellent. He's, as we mentioned along the way, quite acrobatic in his sex scenes and athletic.
He was doing handstands and flip-flops and all sorts of things.
And, of course, he's a funny actor, and the fact that he's in this, like, tax situation, you get to have a lot of fun with him, just kind of hemming and hawing and being worried about things and dealing with these multiple women he's having sex with. I do think that it's amusing his way of trying to get his play panned by Rita, the reviewer, by bribing her. There's a lot of fun to be had here, and of course him calling the police to try to get the play shut down, and how it seemed at first that his plan worked out perfectly because people started having sex on stage just as they were showing up.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Tiffany Clark showed up to make the judge happy, and things didn't quite go his way. There's a lot of fun stuff in here, and ultimately I'd say that it's a fun movie to watch, but it's just not exceptional in any particular way, which is, you know, Roberta Findlay's films tend to not be that exceptional, with the exception of stuff like A Woman's Torment was very interesting, and there's some things that she did with, like, Henri Pichard that are a little bit above her average, but
yeah.
Overall, I'd give this 3 stars. There's a lot of amusing stuff. It's got an overall fun tone, but again, there's just nothing exceptional about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't see enough of it to really come sure. to a strong criticism. It seems like it was fairly nicely shot.
Yeah.
There's some good humor to it, but yeah, kind of a... it's like a sort of a takeoff of the producers in a way that probably isn't as fun as those films. So maybe watch one of those.
Yeah.
Or watch Corporate Assets. Then join us next week.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. And there's not really a whole lot else to say.
You already gave your raincoat disclaimer, too.
Yes. Yes, I led off with that, and I already gave my political discussion about my concerns about laws being passed. We already mentioned Patreon.
I think people just need to consider one or two things. One, I don't know. I'm not going anywhere with this. I almost fell asleep.
All right. Well,
I have nothing to do. I'm just sitting here listening to you, and your voice just puts me into a gentle trance.
This is just like the dream you had where you kept falling asleep during the show.
Yeah, I never actually fell asleep this time, though. I just sort of I read about Madam Web.
Oh, okay.
No, I listened to you. I listened to you talk. You were telling me all about Mr. Cashbox and his money problems.
Yeah.
And I think what I want to impress upon our listeners is that you should just... don't go see a play. Just watch a movie.
Yes, and when you go to watch that movie and you're masturbating furiously while you're watching it, don't forget your raincoat.
Excellent.